Welcome to the Serverless Economics Podcast, where we talk about how your company can leverage serverless to optimize their operational expenses. I'm Josh Proto, joined by Ryan Jones, and we are part of the leadership team at Serverless Guru, a cloud consulting company specializing in reducing operational expenses with serverless. Now, today we're going to be diving into a case study of how FICO modernized their product offering to support millions of users by moving to a serverless architecture. And today we'll be having a slightly different format. We'll be diving into our Q&A as we go throughout the case study in order to highlight the key components of FICO's path to serverless. And as always, if you're short on time, you can download the episode outline in the podcast description. So here is a brief summary of the case study as told from the AWS website. FICO is a predictive analysis and decision management company that provides a leading consumer credit score service used by financial institutions in deciding whether to lend money or issue credit to customers. FICO delivers analytic software and tools to 95% of the largest financial institutions in the United States. So this was an interesting fact that I spent some time unpacking. It is believed that around 253 million individuals in the United States have credit cards or have some level of credit, and FICO is in charge of monitoring 95% of all of those individual scores throughout time. This is an incredible scale of analysis that has to be performed. And I'm interested, Ryan, just at the very front of this, does this seem like something serverless is going to be able to handle?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. When you're reading it off and you said there was, 253 million people that have credit and are managed by FICO, I think that's really, really insane, because the first thing that comes to mind is like security, of course, of like making sure that stuff is secure for all those customers across the United States, as well as like scaling up to be able to support that many people and actually have some level of like analytics, as they mentioned. So I'm curious, as you keep going, like what else is involved inside of their architecture to make that work? Because at least from the onset, you know, something that people talk about with serverless is that, you know, it's the most secure way to build applications, because you're giving you have less responsibility, and you're handing the liability of managing all that stuff over to AWS. And then you're just focused on your application code that would actually make the FICO score system work, which is really nice, especially when you're working with millions of Americans and like sensitive data. The other side of it would be scale. So serverless can scale horizontally. It can scale out through event triggers through all these different AWS resources. And so as they're doing things like dropping things into S3 buckets or working with, let's say, like Kinesis streams or different things like that, like DynamoDB tables that then trigger a Lambda function to do additional processing, I think that Lambda is a perfect use case for that. And they can actually get a whole bunch of different functionality that would be relevant, in my mind, to a FICO system without having to build these systems from scratch.
Completely. I'm interested to see how much they continue to talk about how security, like how they were able to accomplish their security goals using serverless. So let's keep that in the forefront of our minds. So back to the case study, you know, for many years, however, FICO really lacked the agility to quickly develop and deploy its solutions, such as its flagship FICO Decision Management System suite, DMS. This will be really the main focus of this case study. It's DMS that is ended up being transferred over and migrated to serverless. DMS helps customers drive business transformation through predictive analysis, business rules management, and optimization. You know, according to their vice president of product development at FICO, he said, you know, we were an on-premises software company for a long time, and it sometimes took years to create and deliver solutions to our customers. We needed our customers to have faster time to market, and we wanted to focus on implementing our software instead of waiting for customers' IT organizations to provision and build the underlying infrastructure for our solutions. So what Joshua just mentioned, I think, is very, very common. A very common thing that I hear enterprises talk about when they're going to serverless. They want to be more flexible, more agile. They want to iterate quicker. You know, he's saying it sometimes took years to create and deliver solutions. Based on your experience, Ryan, does that seem normal for large enterprises to really have to take years before they can launch out new features of like key software to their clients?
Yeah, I think I think it's extremely common. From my experience, and we're seeing this a lot less in the past few years. It's not only serverless help with this, it's also like the development environments, and there's more technology, there's more fully managed services, even if they're not attached to an Amazon or a Google Cloud. And so I think that, you know, the speed at which people are starting to build these solutions is getting much faster. And we have, you know, a lot of things to thank for that. But now we're actually seeing an even further acceleration with serverless, because they're not only like being able to, you know, like for instance, CI/CD pipelines prior to serverless, you might have had a CI/CD pipeline that where you had to actually build your own server. You had to have all of the different integrations with the with Bitbucket or GitHub, and you had to build those yourself, or you use somewhat of a fully managed system like Jenkins, which is a CI/CD tool that's used by most enterprises. And even still, when I worked at Nike, we had tons of Jenkins servers that were running builds, and they would break all the time, and there was a whole dedicated team to supporting it, and there wasn't, you know, that. And there's like a, there's an asterisk here with like, as the level of impact of your product increases, the level of scrutiny on the code also increases, and the slowness of that increases. And it's really easy to get trapped into systems where, you know, I've done a consulting engagement. I know I'm switching topics, but where I did a consulting engagement for about, you know, eight to 10 months at a big healthcare company, and they had a problem where they had so many processes and so many gatekeepers to getting things done that not only, like, it didn't matter if they had the best technology, it didn't matter if they were using serverless, they had a communication and a people problem, right? And so, you know, the way that this kind of changes a little bit, and even though it's not the technology part of serverless, but it's kind of this downstream effect of it, is that you kind of bring everybody to the table with serverless, and it breaks down those barriers. And so in that way, it allows you to iterate and move faster, because you see the team structure around serverless teams modify how you used to do things. So you used to have silos of like operations teams and developers and front end and back end and testing and product. And they were all kind of segregated into their own spots in the company. But now they're kind of mashed together. And you have one team at these bigger companies, and it's especially Lego.com, for instance, where they're actually, they call them squads. And what these squads represent is like four or five people. It could be more, but basically they're able to deliver a full end-to-end solution within that whole team. So that's like researching, that's building, that's testing, and that's delivery and deployment. And so that used to be a whole bunch of different teams, and it still is at most enterprises. So it doesn't surprise me that FICO would take that long. And I think that with the improvements that serverless gives us, it allows you to spend the time to fix the people problems that before were even more of a bottleneck. And so that's how I would kind of summarize all of this, is that, you know, serverless is not the end-all be-all to fixing all your productivity problems. That would probably mostly be communication, processes, things like that, just like total technical debt and also social debt that you built up over the years of being in business. However, what it does help with is that it solves the infrastructure and all these other downstream problems that you would have if you created it by yourself. And then you can go and tackle your processes and your communication and your technical debt and your social debt.
So as you were saying, you know, in your opinion, even though that a lot of these major enterprises have the ability to, you know, utilize tools like CI/CD tools, things like Jenkins in order to, you know, increase their overall productivity, in general, serverless tends to provide more than one of these older tools. One of the reasons why you're saying that is because it really forces the whole organization to come together and be on the same page. A question I had there is like, you know, how realistic is that? Like, I imagine, you know, it's really easy to say, oh, serverless allows my whole organization to finally come together and work as one, you know, unstoppable machine. But it seems like that's opening up a whole new can of worms. And so do all companies get through that transition? What does it take to actually get through that?
With any new technology or any new trend, for instance, you know, the way that people communicate and describe it is from a perspective of knowing how to do it, and all the problems have been solved maybe by them already, and their entire team may already have the knowledge. And, you know, for instance, you know, if you take Lego.com now, where they have, you know, huge amounts of serverless architecture, you know, very intricate systems, all this stuff, and they're getting that full benefit of serverless. But, you know, it took multiple years, and it took a lot of hard work by the entire Lego.com team to do it. And so I think that if you come from the perspective of like, the benefits are there, but how do you get there? And I think that what Shane Bristles from Lego.com actually recommends, and a lot of other people that I've talked to recently, is that they recommend taking the smallest piece. And so Brian from Begin.com, which I did a podcast with on the Talking Serverless podcast, he talked about taking some small piece like a timer. So you have a server, all it does is one thing, it just has a cron job on it. And let's say every hour it sends a message, or every day it runs some processing. And so things like that like single purpose background process, those are like the best use cases for serverless. And they're the easiest to get started with. So what Brian recommends is to take that single process and then convert that to a Lambda function, convert that to using serverless. And then once you have that small success, then just slowly build on it. And at first it'll seem like, oh man, we have so many processes. We have a thousand cron jobs, not just one, right? We have all these backend APIs, all these databases that we have to manage. But if you start with just that one small piece, then you're going to be able to get buy-in from your leadership. If you're involved in the team, if you're looking for a way to kick off this entire process, then start with something small. It's not going to, different people in the organization, which I've seen from the consulting side, they're going to ask for something, grandiose. They're going to be like, hey, move all of our services over right now, 2 weeks, right? And the reality of it is that it's much more difficult to do that, right? And so, and the big problem is that the one thing you don't want to happen is you don't want to start a new initiative, especially with serverless, and then build some half-baked system, get halfway, and then have to stop because people are going to go, oh, well, this isn't getting anywhere. It's taking too long. We had already done this faster the old way. And then that can end up delaying the process. I still believe once that small spark happens where people see what serverless is capable of, once you take that server running that cron job and turn it into a Lambda that you never have to worry about again, never have to manage it. You never worry about the server breaking or trying to get logs out of the server properly and all the different system level dependencies and operating system things that you have to manage. When you get away from that and all you're focused on is just this code that says like execute this business logic, these like 5-10 lines or 100 lines of code, when you're at that point, you can walk away, you can take your weekend, you don't need people on pager duty and actively following if the server is going to fall over or not. And so start with that, get your small win, buy in from leadership, prove to people that serverless actually is a thing that can be done. Find the most easiest use cases like the cron job that we mentioned. And then from there, once you have that, then start tackling other backend systems like databases, APIs, and go from there. And I think that would probably be the approach that I would recommend to most organizations.
I think you bring up some really good points, especially if you are thinking about your serverless migration or transformation overall as an organization. You can even break it down, not just to like specific services, but even specific teams that are going to be working on it, and sort of being able to prove out those interactions and being able to prove out the change from legacy to serverless and small scale. Then you have internally a team with expertise and buy-in in order to, help the whole organization move forward. So I think that really helps limit your downside risk when making these changes. And I think those were all really good points you brought up. So to move back to the case study, I'm glad we were able to talk about that. Now it goes on to say that really, to remind everyone, FICO was not moving as quickly as it wanted to, and it wasn't able to create new services and new value for its customers like it wanted to. So to solve this problem and to create more opportunity for innovation, FICO decided to move their DMS and other solutions to the cloud. So this is their vice president of engineering, Jeet Kaul. And he's saying, we wanted to be more forward-thinking and bring more innovation to the marketplace, so we realized we needed to go all in on the cloud. Before choosing a cloud provider, though, FICO wanted to make sure it would still be able to offer strong security and remain compliant with the payment card industry, PCI, General Data Protection Regulations, GDPR, and other regulations. A quote that they said was that, FICO chose Amazon Web Services as its cloud provider, in part because of the security capabilities integrated into AWS. And Kaul mentioned again that we needed a company that's invested in financial service companies and their compliance requirements, and AWS was ahead of the competition. I want to pause again, and I think this is where we take the time to talk about security, PCI. I think that acronym has been burned into my mind for all the work and research we've done into it. I think it's poignant that they mention that FICO chose Amazon Web Services as its cloud provider because they really admired its ability to hold to PCI regulations. And I wonder, Ryan, I need to ask you, is AWS really that better at managing PCI and GDPR than Azure or Google Cloud? Or what are the foundational concepts these cloud providers need to follow in order to be compliant with things like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's probably the most common question you would probably have if you're a financial services company and you're evaluating moving from on-premises to the cloud like FICO did. And I would say that a big thing that Amazon has in its corner is that, you know, maturity of their services, and that they've been doing this for long enough where they worked in that stuff and they solved those problems around PCI a really long time ago. Whereas some of the newer cloud providers, they're just now starting to come over that barrier. And so a lot of their services, like you'll see a Google Cloud or an Azure service, and they may not have that compliance level because it's a new service and they've only had it for a little bit. But even the NoSQL offerings for databases or SQL offerings for databases or, you know, all these different services that they offer that are fully managed, they are PCI compliant with AWS. The asterisk being there that, you know, the one thing you always have to take in consideration is that, you know, the cloud provider is going to help to some degree. So you definitely want to have a cloud provider. If you're using their service, you want to make sure that they're handling their part. However, your part is definitely making sure that you keep encryption. You limit how much, information, financial information are actually transmitting through your system. And you handle it properly and you go through all the guidelines that they have to actually make sure that you achieve that PCI compliance. And if you have the services that are there that handle most of it for you and you use those, you can put yourself way ahead. And what I would say is, I probably can't talk off the top of my head, but we did do I was on a podcast or a webinar with, Partigo about PCI compliance. And I also wrote an article about PCI compliance on the, medium.com/serverlessguru. And if you go onto our Medium publication there, you can actually read my thoughts on PCI compliance. And I go into a lot more detail around how to handle your services and how to make PCI compliance work inside of a serverless environment. So that would be my thoughts is that, you know, there's always this responsibility matrix when it comes to the cloud provider. They're going to handle a lot of it for you, but you still have to do your part.
It brings up the point that when you're working in these heavily regulated industries, you really need to make sure that your cloud providers are going to serve your unique needs. And would you say that this is one of those needs that, you know, everyone wants to have the best unique solution for them, but sometimes that's not always possible? Do you think this is something that, you know, it's worth taking the extra time to really figure out you have a real good partner, not just in the cloud service provider, but any other companies that you, you know, really entrust to help you get from point A to point B with serverless?
Yeah, no, definitely. When it comes to, I would say, not only security, not only PCI compliance or any specific use cases, but just in a general theme of things, whenever you're making decisions, whenever you're trying to move to a different system or make a migration, you definitely need to spend the extra time making the checklist, making sure that all the things that you can currently do with your existing system can be done with the new system. Because it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where you don't want to start on something for a month or 2 months or get halfway there and then have to stop. And then people bring up concerns that you don't have answers for. And then people start backpedaling. You lose the, at first, when you start a new initiative, you're obviously going to have people that are questioning the direction of it. The last thing that you want is to have an incident where maybe something wasn't fully thought through. You don't have the right answer for it. And then that effect kind of bleeds out through the rest of the teams. Because it may look very unprepared, and then this is much more important for the enterprise level. Because when you're working with the amount of people that are required to make a migration like this work, you need to make sure that the due diligence is done and overdone and checked 3 times. And so one of those things would be if you have financial data that's flowing through your system, then you absolutely need to spend as much time as possible to make sure that every single thing that you touch on any cloud provider is verified, and that you read through the documentation. If you're a much bigger enterprise, you have a security team, even hiring outside consultants that help with PCI compliance specifically. Cloud consultants are also a great way if they specialize in that area, just to make sure that all of your T's are crossed and your I's are dotted, because then later on, it's going to save you all the downstream costs of it, especially with all the data leaks and things like this that we see in the news. You definitely don't want to be in that situation.
No, definitely. That's not a situation you want to be in. And this is certainly one of those instances I would also agree where you want to, you know, do your due diligence beforehand when it comes to making a decision like this, especially in industries where the regulations are so tight and you have a lot of people who are really relying on you in order to cross all your T's and dot your I's, like you said. All right. So we're near the end of the case study. And so we will touch back there. And you know, specifically, Call is saying that FICO was specifically interested in AWS Lambda, a service that provides serverless compute capabilities so customers can run code without the need to provision or manage servers. And now because FICO decided to utilize AWS Lambda and other AWS services to manage compute instances, the company's developers now had more time to build new software and enhance the DMS instead of provisioning and managing servers. Call goes on to say, you know, because AWS Lambda does the provisioning automatically, we have completely unblocked the potential for our developers to innovate. Taking advantage of AWS Lambda, FICO DMS development teams continue to move quickly, solve software issues during the development process faster than ever before. We had a situation where we were a few weeks away from going live with a software update, but something wasn't performing well. Though using AWS Lambda and other services, we came up with a new way to solve the issue and created a completely new design before it went into production. So, you know, this final point they make is really interesting because I think it points a picture that, you know, the problems that come up with AWS Lambda really aren't that big of problems compared to working with legacy systems. And it's hard for me to suspend my disbelief. Is that really the case? Are problems with AWS Lambda intrinsically less problematic than the things that you would run into with a legacy system, or at least what they're used to?
I would say that serverless definitely allows way less overhead and downstream problems than kind of baking it yourself or making the server, building the containers, building your Kubernetes system, and then maintaining it and rolling out updates and making sure that everything works properly. And the most critical time for that is definitely when you're rolling out new things. So you can solve these problems with the old, but with the legacy way of some of these, these systems are configured. There are companies out there that do it, and there are people out there that do it. However, the complexity level of it is much, much higher. So for instance, you don't want to build the car from scratch. You want to drive the car. And so, if you're required to build the car from scratch and everyone had to do that, a lot of these cars, would not work that well. Even after people build up experience over multiple years building their own car that they're driving, if you're not allowed to just have this car that you can just jump in and drive that you know is going to work, that's been verified and has all the stickers that you need, all these things, then, you're going to have a ton of downstream problems from that. And so one thing would be also when it comes to actually releasing things, when you're working with a legacy system like that, you run into problems very often. And it's also, this also goes back to the people problem, where it's not just technology, where there's just too many cooks in the kitchen, right? So like there's too many hands that have to do things. There's too many handoffs. There's too many people that don't have knowledge of the exact thing that's being rolled out. They get the baton, they have to then run with it. So I've seen that a lot, when I was at this healthcare company and I was working on an operations team for a little bit. And, there was all these processes and things that they had to actually go through. And the amount of people that were involved to even do anything was astronomical compared to some of the startups and a little bit more lean organizations that I've worked with. And so I think that that's a very common problem. I think that, serverless allows you to have kind of that, as we talked about earlier, like a tapered down team where they're delivering a full end-to-end system. And so for me, for instance, if I play the devil's advocate here, if I was on that team and we were rolling out a release on a legacy system, I 100% have to hand that off to someone. There's nothing that I can do there because my focus is on building, let's say, backend APIs or building a front end or something like that, right? What we see now and what we're starting to see transition is the emergence of the full stack cloud developer. Once again, I talk about this subject specifically, full stack cloud developers, with Nader Dabit on the Talking Serverless podcast, that we recorded just a few days ago. I'm sure if you're listening to this now, it's already been released. So definitely check that out. because Nader Dabit, he has a very fresh perspective on how serverless in the cloud changes development roles. But to touch on that very briefly, full stack cloud developers, you know, they're building a front end. They may have some back end addition as well. They may also handle the deployment and the infrastructure as code building. And then you have supporting tools. And so that's what's really nice. If the front end, let's say, for instance, you need to make the UI look good to the user, that's obviously going to take some human aspect of actually putting that together and making it look good. When it comes to something like the CI/CD pipeline in a serverless environment with fully managed services, is they've gotten better and better and better at making it super simple. So now, you know, if you use a website to actually do the CI/CD, it can hook directly into your GitHub or Bitbucket. If you're running your own, there's a lot of different providers that allow you to actually run an offline version. But the biggest core thing there is that when you have, you know, let's say I run into a problem with my system, if I was the one that built it, I know exactly where to look because I've debugged it so many times already. So I know what the code does. I know where to look for it. I know all the weird nuances around, you know, let's say the naming convention of this service and this service kind of correlate a little bit, but they're actually different. And this is a very common problem across when I've done consulting for these different companies. They'll have something called profile and profiles and, you know, profile list, and they'll have three different separate services with that naming convention. And then imagine that then with those little things that you 100% can document ahead of time, even if you have documentation for it, if you document every single little nuance there, the other person's not just going to, they're not going to know about it, especially if you're a bigger organization. There's going to be multiple distributed teams. So my answer to that would be have the person actually built it be the person that's actually deploying it. And that only works in situations where you have the ability to tap in to something like serverless, where there's so many fully managed services that are holding up your entire infrastructure and your entire application that you can rely. I can rely that API gateway is going to work properly for my REST API. I can rely on DynamoDB to scale properly and to have the, you know, all the data redundancy and all these things. I can rely on Lambda to scale horizontally and give responses quickly. And then it's up to me as a developer to make sure that my code actually works. And so when you isolate it to the actual developer code is the thing that's causing the problems and not all the downstream infrastructure and services, you need less people, you have less kitchen, you know, cooks in the kitchen. And with that point, the actual development process becomes a lot easier to roll out and deploy. And then if you sprinkle on a CI/CD on top of that and you have automated testing and integration testing automatically and acceptance testing to make sure that the entire system works, then you can have those hooked into your CI/CD pipeline. Every time a developer makes a push, it's going to run all your tests, make sure all the stuff works, deploy it, even potentially run what's called, you know, acceptance testing or smoke tests, where it actually runs the entire system, not just like you know, unit tests. And then from there, you can get an automatic pass or fail. And then if you think about the idea that now the infrastructure concerns are also gone, you can end up creating super fast deployments. And so if you go back like 5, 6 plus years ago, there was actually a talk at one of the developer conventions where he talks about how their company was doing like 300 deployments a day. And, you know, my memory of this is really bad, but they were doing 300 deployments a day. And at the time, a lot of people were only doing like a couple of releases per quarter, right? So they were doing like, you know, let's say 100, 300 deployments a day. And now that's super common, actually. So this is happening all across the world with companies globally that have taken advantage of all these different services in the cloud specifically, as well as serverless. And they're able to achieve that because of just the level of like what we talked about earlier with the processes. It's like once you have the infrastructure problem solved, you can then turn your focus towards the social problems and the internal problems that are actually plaguing your company. And at that point, then you can start fixing all the inefficiencies. And at the surface, you may go, oh, the technology is a problem. Okay, now it's like the communication. Okay, now it's actually that the way that we have these things structured is actually could be improved. And what's really nice is that the more things that you can do in your company where you have less responsibility and less liability of owning that part, and the more you can offload that to a third-party vendor or to a cloud provider that has really good SLAs and information about, you know, what if something goes wrong, how do you get in contact with their support team? I think that's where, you know, these companies can really shine.
I think it makes a lot of sense when you say that, you know, it is realistic that the problems, in a sense, that you have in a serverless architecture with using AWS Lambda are magnitudes more, less complex, or at least quicker to solve than using a legacy system, because there's less variables that you have to sort of account for or hand off to someone else who doesn't have like the on the ground tacit knowledge of being the person who wrote the code or sort of started the system in that way. So that's a very, very interesting point that you made there. And I think that's very salient just to restate and to mention, because I think that can sometimes get lost or sometimes seem too good to be true. You know, like how can just switching to serverless just reduce all these problems that I have? Well, it's because that the same person who's making the problem is the one who's solving it. It's not telephoned down to three other people or three other departments who's now in charge of, you know, taking the buck. So I think, you know, with everything being said, I'd say one of my biggest takeaways after reading this case study and going through it is sort of, you know, A, it is possible to be a very heavily regulated industry with a lot of legacy software and a lot of legacy infrastructure, and move to serverless and have it transform your business, have it really create better products and better experiences for your customers, and increase the productivity, happiness, and the overall just development cycle of the people programming inside your own team. And I think that is one of the biggest takeaways that I'm seeing from FICO. And so I'm glad we were able to go over this today. What are your thoughts on it, Ryan?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I like to hear that bigger companies are getting involved and that, you know, they're taking this track into actually doing a migration of that scale and actually moving to serverless, because, you know, it is something that is very easy to look at it and kind of go, oh, this is just another trend that's coming out. But really, when you actually play around with it and, you know, if you move that one server over to a Lambda function and make sure it's just a very small POC that you can do in a couple of days of just like mirroring at least some functionality, right? Maybe it's not the level of the cron job, you know, to that full complexity that yours actually is. But if you just start with it, build a quick POC, have one of your developers do it, have them report back on how it works, then move that small little server, I think that it shows wonders of like what the level that you can get to. Because as we've seen in a lot of these case studies that we've done on the podcast, is that so many of these companies have increased performance, time to market, they've innovated more, the delivery speed is faster, their entire team feels empowered. And I think that that's a big one that we haven't talked about in the episode so far, is that for a developer, when they're working on things that are cutting edge and that are new and that make them feel like they have superpowers, they really want to work with you. They really want to grow with the company. They feel like every box that a developer has around like skill acquisition and growing in their career and feeling like they have the ability to do things and experiment. I feel like serverless gives you that freedom because, you know, let's say at least on the experimentation side, and I'll cut the rant short, but on the experimentation side, you know, for me, if somebody, you know, if the organization is running a serverless application and we've solved all these problems already, we don't have to manage the exact database storage and all these things, and we don't have that operations team with PagerDuty and making sure that our servers don't get maxed out or something like that. What's nice is that I can go, okay, well, what if I did this thing? And I can present that to my manager, and my manager can say, oh yeah, well, you know, sure, go for it, right? And it's because there's like this certain level of like so many other things are solved, and you have more freedom and more bandwidth to be creative and innovative. And what you find is that actually you don't need to seek innovation and creativity outside, external to your organization. If you can empower your people that are already inside of your company, then you can really see you know, huge benefits from that, because they're going to be able to show you the full scale of what they're capable of, because they don't have to worry about all these little, you know, if I had to go through six processes to get something across the table, if I had to present a slideshow, six processes of gatekeepers and, you know, all the downstream things of that, it stifles innovation and it makes me not even want to start. But then when you remove those barriers, when you, you know, allow developers to be more efficient, your entire team, your entire organization, then, you know, like what we see with FICO, they're able to actually deliver at a scale and at a level and a quality, all these things that just it was just not possible with their existing system when they're running it on premises.
It really wasn't. And as much as we always like to sort of circle it back and mention, you know, and sort of speculate on like the amount of like operational costs or total cost savings, you know, a switch to serverless could really bring, you know, I think the FICO case study, you know, I'm sure they experienced a significant level of operational cost savings or capital cost savings. But I think they really hint on, you know, that those savings are really just the very beginning. Because ultimately, if you're freeing up all of that cost, usually it's also at a detriment to your internal team's ingenuity and focus and ability to get things done and innovate. And that's really the most valuable thing to the company. And that, you know, at net at the end of the day, you may not be having, you know, more profit or revenue on the balance sheet, but you're now able to execute innovation and increase customer satisfaction at a level that is maybe 2, 3, 5, 10 times that you were before. And I think that's the real value and the real benefit. And I think that's the benefit that the FICO case study is really hinting and leading at. And, you know, I want to thank all of our listeners today for listening to the Serverless Economics Podcast. You know, again, I am Josh Proto, and I'm thankfully here joined by Ryan Jones, the CEO of Serverless Guru. And if you like our podcast and like this episode, please give us a rating and give us a review either on iTunes or Google Podcasts, anywhere the podcasts are found. We'll be there. We really appreciate it. And if you can, you know, please tell us what your favorite episode is. And we'd love to engage with our listeners a bit more about that and hear what you like. You know, this is a new format. We'll probably stick with this for a little bit more. So give us some feedback about which ones that you like the best and maybe other things you'd like us to drill down deeper into when we analyze these companies. So thank you all very much for listening, and we will hear you next time.